Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us for a podcast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions, and the call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com. And search for caller ID 17702. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you need to reach me via Skype, my Skype ID is FranzGames. FranzGames. And of course, you can follow me on the Twitters. My account there is sfuoncall. That's sfuoncall. Same spelling as email address. And also, my personal account is Paul Franz. You can find me there at twitter.com/PaulFranz. And of course, this lovely TalkCast gets turned to podcasts available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from A to B this week. There's steady work from Steve Cole on Cabin's Log number 53, which has reached over 50%. Steve Patrick was busy working on, of course, SFB updates and also the Gorn Master Starship book. Gene has been managing, of course, the Facebook page and making sure things get uploaded to Shapeways. And, of course, keeping the spam assault on BBS down. And also was busy proofreading parts of Cabin's Log number 53. And, of course, was being the friendly customer service rep for the company. Onward and forward, when it comes to SFB Online tournaments, we still have the one which is the Masters Tournament and still stuck. Now, at the moment, the tournaments are on pause. Any new tournaments are on pause because of the decision to change the way we do tournaments. That's going to require a little bit of work from me when it comes to getting things done. I'm not sure exactly how it's supposed to get done because we're going to have like a tournament fee and things like that. The full announcement will be later on. I'll talk to Steve Cole about exactly, make sure that everything that he posted on the discussion board is exactly how it's going to stand. And there will be no change from this is it. This is the final decision. I don't want to announce it here until I know about that. Also, if you want to, you can find the SFB Online client channel on YouTube. Just search for SFU Online Client and you'll find different posts on that. Also, of course, we have the library, and unfortunately, no library progress for this week. There was nothing converted. Obviously, as of last week, we're up to almost 75%, which is good. Hopefully, we can get up into the 90s because I'm still haven't done it, and I apologize for this, which is actually going over the conversions that need to be completed and how those break down. What's the percentage of that are Omegas? Which ones are fighters? Which ones are fighters? Which ones are PFs? Where are they in the whole range of things when it comes to the ships? And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one, the only, Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, you got me, you got Dave, and why aren't you here? Because you can join us either in the YouTube stream live feed. You can go find the link and click on it, and you're right there. I apologize, I forgot to do that this week on Facebook. Did it on Twitter, did it on the discussion board, and that's it. It's just been kind of a crazy day. So, ever had one of those days that you have too much to do and too little time to do it in? One of the things I had to do today was take a nap. Because otherwise, you'd be finding yourself listening to me snoring. So, given that, we're going to start this evening. And I think this is probably going to be the last of the Tournament Tactics series that I've been doing for the past almost 2 months now. I think maybe even longer than that. Because I'm going to start with Romulan Tournament Tactics, and I was going to go on to Gorn. And obviously one thing I was thinking of is that for the most part, those two are pretty intertwined. Because they're both pretty much plasma chuckers, they overall, their tactics are around the same to a degree. Obviously, the big difference is going to be the ships and the phaser arcs and the plasma arcs between the two ships. Now, of course, the one thing about the Romulans is that which ship? This is not, it's not like, oh, okay, you pick the Romulan. Okay, which Romulan? You've got three of them. You've got the Tournament Firehawk. You've got the Tournament King Eagle. And you got the Tournament KR, Kestrel. Thank you. The Kestrel ship. All of them have their own benefits. Obviously, for the King Eagle, which I personally like just because of, I guess part of it comes down to the introduction to the Romulans for me was watching that initial episode of the original series where, I had the name kind of going around my head of the episode, but I can't remember off right now. Flew away. I remember seeing the bird of prey and launching this big balance of terror. Thank you, Dave. Balance of terror. In that episode, that big ball of fire heading towards the Enterprise. That is my initial introduction into Romulan ships. So anything that's not that is not Romulan. Well, not it's not what I expected. So I guess that's one of the reasons why I like it. Also, I think that's the main reason. Not if I really searched my soul on the issue. Obviously, there's some really cool things about the King Eagle when it comes to tournament play. It's one of the few ships that you actually have Dave just mentioning that there's a Star Trek version of a movie called The Enemy Below had Robert Mitchum in it, and he's saying it was a great movie. Enemy Below, was that like about subs? In World War II theme? Probably. Because the Enemy Below, that's what... Yeah, okay, I was right. Okay, because I've never seen it, but the Enemy Below, that's what my thought was. Okay. Getting back to it. The King Eagle, it's one of the few ships in the whole tournament play that you actually have pseudo-torpedoes for the Plasma F. And because of, right, Dave's just kind of clarifying that Balance of Terror was the Star Trek version of The Enemy Below. Yes. sorry. Keep getting sidetracked there. But, it's one of the few ones that actually have Plasma Fs. I mean, pseudo Plasma Fs. So I was like, cool. And this is kind of important because it kind of needs it because unlike the Kestrel, or the Firehawk, both of those have two plasma S's, so they have four plasmas. Because with four plasmas, what do? What you do is normally with you pair them up. You launch an S and an F at the same time. Why do you do that? Well, you do that because of it's enough if. Those two plasma hit together, that's enough to knock down a shield, which is the goal, which is why you want to have it so that people will actually run away from you, will turn away, because Invariably, the goal of any plasma chucker is not to have the plasma land. That is not the goal. The goal is using the plasma. Now, if it hits, great. If it doesn't, at least early on. Because usually there's at least a two-phase process for the Rhymelands, for any plasma chucker. And that is you launch the plasma. Use the plasmas to corral your enemy. You use it as mobile terrain, which I've discussed many, many times. And using that as mobile terrain, you know, you have the two plasma torpedoes in that scenario because you want to guarantee that the shield will go down, assuming that the plasma S is a real plasma S. This is where the gotcha goes. Because usually people that find plasma chuckers, this to me, it all comes down to one critical thing, knowing thy enemy. You need, when it comes to fighting a plasma chucker, you need to know your enemy. You need to be able to guess, is he going to be using a pseudo in this case, or is he going to be using a real? Until you find out the fake ones, the pseudos that have been launched and, you know, and been used up. Up to that point, you are guessing because of, obviously, okay, he wants to make you think that they're real because you're going to waste your Pfizer firepower on them because at that point, you know, you can then launch your real one and actually hit them good and hard. At least it's a possibility, obviously, that's, it comes to situations where is in the turn and all that kind of thing. But at the very least, it allows you to use that a plasma torpedo for mobile terrain without actually using a plasma torpedo for mobile terrain. You still have not used the real one, it takes you three turns to recharge. Now, that's why usually using the plasma, the pseudoplasmas early in the turns, early in the game, is kind of, it's a lot easier to deploy because of, invariably you find yourself in this situation, especially against like direct fire opponents, that they have a shorter rearming sequence than you do. Well, most of them do. Even, especially, you know, the Klingons or any of them with disruptors, they have single arm. So while you're recharging your plasma torpedoes, they're beating down on your butt. So what do you have to do? In some cases, depending upon the situation, you might actually have to do a fast load F in the using the S on the S torpedo tubes. That gives you an F, not as effective as an S, but it gives you the ability to actually inflict damage and possibly even to dissuade your opponent from actually coming in closer, or at the very least, allow you to soak up some of the the possible potential offensive potential, i.e., phasers that the opponent would be actually firing on you. So that's why it's easier to do it earlier on, because of you have a more opportunity to actually launch your plasma S's as 30 point torpedoes. I'm not saying that, you know, later on in the game you can't do the same thing. Of course you're going to be able to do the same thing, but also depending upon your opponent might be a little bit more aggressive. If he's more aggressive, especially when he knows that you're down, you're recharging maybe both of your plasmas. Because if you launch your plasmas, a real plasma S on turn one, and a real plasma S on turn two, so that means that you won't have another plasma S until turn four. So turn three, your opponent comes barreling in on you. But you still have that fast load F, which can help you in that regard. Now, given that, you know, it, that's That's why the whole reason is to use your plasmas in the early game to actually corral your opponent, use it as mobile terrain. Later on, when your opponent may not be quite maneuverable, you know, you're fighting on the end game, that's when normally you'd want to go and hit them with your plasmas. Up until that point, your main weapon is not the plasmas. Your main weapon is your phasers. You always have to keep that in mind, because that's where you're going to produce the most damage to your opponent in the meantime, before your plasmas actually hit, because your opponent's either going to wild weasel, in which case you go, yay! Wild weasels are one of those gotchas. You know, if you wild weasel, that means you're stuck. And after you're stuck, you're stopped. And if you're stopped, you can be stuck. Because if you don't have a plan for actually escaping your hole that you just put yourself in, you might as well just put the dirt over yourself, you know, because you're dead. Obviously, the great benefit of stopping is that now you have, in SFB, and this is not FedCom, this is SFB, you have a lot more power available to you for reinforcement and defense. Now, you always have to be careful about that in terms of play, because guess what? You can actually lose the game, because the judge will come over and say, you're not engaging. I'm going to give the game to your opponent because you weren't being aggressive enough, because that's one of the rules of the tournament, because we had problems in the past where people were not being aggressive enough. They get a little bit ahead and then they sit and spin. You know? But anyhow, so you know that's the benefit of having those plasma torpedoes. I mean the S plasma torpedoes, because you have a lot more flexibility. That's why the King Eagle needs to have those pseudo S's, F's, because what can you do in those with those F's? You actually can produce, to a certain degree, the same ability to have your opponent turn. Obviously, if your big plasma R, you launch that sucker, your opponent is going to run. Now, again, that's going to, when it comes to your opponent, question is, how well does your opponent know you? Because the more your opponent knows you, the more likely he's going to be able to guess what you're going to do. Obviously, it can be considered bold to either launch a real plasma or launch a pseudo. Actually, pseudo, in my mind, is not that aggressive, just because of you're playing it safe. You know that, especially in the case of the King Eagle, if you launch a Plasma R, how many of your opponents are going to not turn away, especially if early on in the turn, when they cannot really guess how much energy how much energy you're using, but in the first turn, it's really hard to guess that because of one thing. Normally, one thing to remember about if you are flying the King Eagle, and that is that Plasma R. The Plasma R is best is not to do a rolling delay, you know, and then decide at EA time when you're going to launch that Plasma R, launch it. You know, finish arming of the Plasma R. That's the bad way of doing it. The best way of doing it, one that gives you the most flexibility. Because if you want to, you can do an EA, yes, but also you can do it in the mid-turn using reserve power. And that is taking that R torpedo tube, filling it, getting a S torpedo, have that holding that S torpedo for the 2 points of power that you've got that is required to hold it. Then, and only then, use the extra, you know, the reserve power that you need, which is 3 points, to actually launch the as an R. You can up something that's an S, you can, or a lower class plasma, you can upgrade on the fly. As long as the torpedo tube can actually handle it, you can upgrade an actually finished off torpedo. So in the case of the King Eagle, when it comes to R, that's what you want to do, because of otherwise you have to do a rolling delay, and then you have to actually launch it. Actually, I don't think it costs you 3. I think it costs you 2. In addition to the, because you're holding it, I think there are only 2 more points of power. When it comes to that, because in that case you're saving yourself. You are doing that now. Obviously, there is a benefit to actually doing a rolling delay, but there are not going to be many people that are actually going to do this, or many opportunities, because the big issue is, of course, the wild weasel, and that is enveloping your plasma R. An enveloped plasma R is the scariest thing on the entire board. Because if you have a 100-point torpedo coming towards you, are you going to be even want to get close to that? Now, obviously, if it's developing and it hits fresh shields, 100 divided by 6, that's going to be approximately 16, I think. Yeah, I think it's 16 boxes approximately per. That's not exact. You know, that's some leftover. There's 4 of them will be 17, and the rest will be 16. But 16 boxes, basically you've blown away half your opponent's shields. Given that you've blown away half your opponent's shields, you know, they're not going to be exactly in the best situation that can be imagined. So, given that, your opponent will never, ever do that. And of course, an Andromedan will never, ever, ever, ever do that, because of if you ever had an Andromeda hit a 100-point enveloper, what's going to happen? It's going to get 10 internals, guaranteed. Which is why the Andromeda would never, ever, ever do that. Now, of course, we have the minor problem with the Andromeda, which is if it uses a displacement device to run, quote unquote, run away from that plasma R, and it fails, just say goodbye. But that's as a Romulan player, you don't want to bet the farm on that. So, given that, you know, for the King Eagle, you've got two possibilities when it comes to starting. You can launch both Plasma Fs or launch Plasma R as either pseudo or real, because you can launch it as real, but this is when if a person knows you too well, that if the person knows that your normal tactics every single time you play is to launch pseudo, or most of the time you launch pseudo, your opponent might gamble and go, you know, I know it's pseudo. I know it's pseudo. I know it is. I know it is. And go running right through it. Now, if he does that and it is a pseudo, he's going to find out soon enough. Because of there's going to be a point where you cannot ignore that, because he's going to close on you, be close to you, which you don't want to happen. So, in that case, you're going to either launch 2 Fs to possibly save you, so that you can still keep up the guise of that plasma R is a real plasma R, and I'm just, you know, giving you a little umph, a little pump. Or, you know, at the worst case scenario, you know, that he finds out the pseudo and he has to run through 2 Fs, which still is a formidable opponent. But at that point, you've used up both your pseudo and 2 Fs. So, you know, obviously you don't want to launch all three on their first turn, on your first battle pass. That's crazy because of it's an all or nothing deal. Now, so obviously the big issue with the King Eagle is it only has four phaser ones. That's the big eagle. That's the big issue. But also the King Eagle has one thing that the other Romulan ships does not have. And that is actual ability to cloak and move at a decent speed for a cloaking ship. Because remember, cloaking ships overall are not that fast. Because what's happening? Most of your energy is going towards a cloak. But as is pointed out multiple times, I'm pretty sure I mentioned this before, which is anyone can cloak. Not everyone can get out of the cloak. Because after you cloak, you have to have a plan on how you're going to uncloak. Just like I mentioned about the Wild Weasel. But in this case, it's not like you're actually benefiting energy-wise from cloaking. You have no benefit whatsoever. The only benefit you have is that your opponent will not have lock on you. If he has lock on you, there's no reason for the cloak. Overall, to a certain degree, you still get some advantages, but other advantages go out the window. But when you're cloaked, their opponent was probably he can overrun you, but if it overruns you, that's a possibility. Now. Here's the one thing that you also have to remember about the King Eagle. The King Eagle has something which none of them have, and I so wish. It has a T-bomb that it can drop. What's the benefit of that? The benefit of that is in two cases. One, if you have an opponent that's going to overrun you and you're moving, and he's coming right after you, and you can drop it. So it activates, because I'm pretty sure dropping a T-bomb or a mine out your hatch does not void your cloak, unlike launching a shuttle. So, person overruns you and hits you, or he has to make sure that he doesn't overrun you. That might give him, or at the very least, maybe hit away after he overruns you. So you're going to force them to some decision that he might not inevitably want to really make, but he has to do it anyway. That's one. Two, if you have an opponent chasing you, you can drop it out, especially if it's chasing you across the board. That's one way to give yourself a little bit of room, i.e., the ability to have him so that at some point he has to slip away. And when he slips one direction, you can turn the other direction so you can hopefully at that point you can actually open the range just a slight bit. Because in some cases that little slight bit of opening the range is all you need to give you that one extra hex to get out of that close in range bracket. So, so that's one of those things that's unique about the King Eagle. So, most probably you're going to launch the Plasma R as a pseudo first battle pass. Most probably you're going to do that. But don't be predictable. Every once in a while, you have to launch a real one. Because if you don't launch a real one, especially if you're playing against the same opponent, you'll be predictable. And he'll, at some point, say, I'm going to overrun you because I know that that's a fake. He won't do it all the time because if he does it all the time, then you'll counteract that by automatically always launch a real Plasma R. So, keep on guessing. That's the key. Okay, when it comes to the Kestrel... Let's go through the three ships real quick when it comes to turn modes, and that is the King Eagle has the worst, has a turn mode D. The Kestrel has turn mode B, and the Firehawk has turn mode C. So then of course we have the Plasmas. Now, comparing the Kestrel to the Firehawk, the big advantage in my mind, to me, it's an advantage. Some people don't like it, but I do. Which is you have the LPRP Plasmas. I like that kind of Gorn configuration. It's not quite Gorn. Gorn is a little different. But, so that what that allows you to do is launch plasmas going backwards, i.e., shields 5 and 3. So you can launch out there if someone's trying to chase you. You have the ability to actually launch plasmas. Versus the Firehawk. The Firehawk has the build, has the Fs are RPLP, but the plasma Ss are FP, i.e. the front half of the ship as a launch angle. not the launch angle, but the ships that you can launch at. Because that's the key, because obviously with FH, you can't launch on the hex, the shield boundary, which is the hex line. But, so you have to do you have to launch an FA arc, but you can fire on any ship that's in the FH arc. That's the key there. But anyway, getting back to the Kestrel, with that turn mode B, and of course, the phasers got on the same as the Klingon. And given that has that B turn mode, it's a little bit maneuverable, which means that you can get that extra 1 point. You can use that one extra movement and still maintain the same turn mode, which means you can turn faster. And believe it or not, that one hex can make a huge difference in play over the long run. And of course, then there's also if you want to get close in, which I don't know many people that actually want to do even plasma people who want to do a knife fight, because of when it comes to knife fights, usually you want weapons that are single turn arming weapons that recharge and are available quite often, so that you can fire every single turn and stay close and still beat on your opponent. You don't want to have to wait for 3 turns or even 2 turns for your weapon to rearm. That's why, for the Fed, obviously, has limited, the photons have limited arcs, but obviously, a two-turn army weapon, but the Fed has so many phasers that a knife fight actually is not that bad for it. Though, obviously, getting those photons in arc in a knife fight is a heck of a lot more complicated. So that's the beauty of the Kestrel. Now, obviously, we have the Firehawk. The Firehawk, as I mentioned, has the FH, which some people that's what they like because of one of the benefits of the FH. Well, it's FP arc, but direct fire arc would be FH. Is that because of but that gives you the ability to do something that the Kestrel can't do, which is have two plasma S's launched at your opponent when your opponent is about to go get into your rear arc. When it's going to go from the front half to the rear half, that shield boundary, because that's what your opponent is going to want But of course, if, when you launch the plasma at your opponent, whether it's one or two, then it's going to hopefully it'll dissuade your opponent from staying long, basically, because they might because what they're going to want to do is possibly turn. They want to turn in, and hopefully you'll keep on going straight, and they can get in behind you. And if they can't get in behind you, you know, actually, if they turn in, or at least one thing that having the plasma, it might force your opponent to have it so that they do not turn in towards you, because they turn in, they are most likely going to be hit by this plasma which you just launched. And if you have two real S's, that your opponent would be in a big bag of hurt. So that's one of the benefits of the Firehawk. But of course, for that benefit, what do you give up? Well, you just gave up turn mode. It's one of the things that you gave up. And of course, the phaser arcs are a bit different. There's some benefits to the Firehawk, and you know the. Give me a sec here. I want to bring up the SSD. Here it is. Okay. Yeah, the two FX versus the Kestrel, which actually has three FX. So, but it has. And this is going to be weird, which is a RX Phaser 1, which is, in my mind, a very interesting weapon because it allows you to fire a phaser directly aft so you can fight any opponents that are chasing you. But, of course, you also have the two Phaser 3s, which are RA plus L and RA plus R. So rear arc right and rear arc left. So they can protect that phaser one. And of course, then you have the left side, right side phaser threes. So going aft, you got good protection when it comes to defensively, and you got a little bit of offensive potential. So, but with the RX, that means you have a phaser one that's can be pretty well protected from being destroyed when it comes to internals. So you have that. Of course, also if you want to, you can have it so that if it comes in on shield number 2 or shield number 6, it can hit that, which is, you know, because for you, the oblique is where you have the most phasers available when it comes to the Firehawk. Because you've got 6 phaser 1. 6? No, 5. Sorry, 5. All 5 of your phaser 1s are available to fire. While when it comes to the KR, you might only have 4. And the KR, of course, has the special arcs of the Klingon, which has the pluses and the minuses, meaning, just a reminder, there are, for those wings, the wing phasers, there are hexes that get removed from the arc, not just added to. So when you remember when you're playing that, remember the special arc rules and look them up before you play. So overall, and of course, one of the beauties of the Firehawk, of course, also is that you have center warp. Center warp is something that's really hard to kill. And that is one of the benefits for the Firehawk. That is, the engines can survive longer, i.e. your power can survive longer than the other two Romulan ships, where they only have right and left warp. So those are your options for Romulan. Obviously, when it comes to plasma chuckers, you have to keep that in mind about your tactics, because you're going to be using your plasma for both mobile terrain and then finally hopefully the coup de grace. Now, the one thing I did not mention is something which is rarely used when it comes to plasma chuckers, but it's because it's a really, really bold move. And something I don't think you can try with a King Eagle, but overall, it doesn't have, in my mind, if you can accomplish it, you're really bold. But overall, I don't see the King Eagle being able to do it. And of course, that is the Gorn Anchor. The Gorn Anchor is a nasty little tactic, but it's a hard thing to pull off. Why? Because a lot of people see it coming. And that's why the tactic is rarely used. And because the tactic is rarely used, every once in a while you can pull it off. Usually this requires you to actually tractor your opponent on the first turn. Because if you tractor your opponent on the first turn, he is truly less likely to actually have the anti-tractor power available to them. Because if you can get to like range one to your opponent and you've prepared for this, i.e. have somewhere around 4 or 5 points of power into your tractor, the only tractor they might have 2 points. Standard practice is you allocate 1 point of tractor, 1 point of power for each tractor beam, and then of course you have your energy in your batteries, so that's 7 points of power. So if you allocate like 9 or 10, you know, give yourself a little breathing room, you can tractor your opponent, in which case he cannot wild weasel. He is truly, truly, truly stuck. Unless he gets lucky on a Mizzy attack, obviously. Getting range one of your opponent, you better have an opponent that you can do this with. I wouldn't be doing this, a range one attack, on a fed, unless he had fired his photons early in the turn, you know, before he actually got the range one. To me, you could probably catch a Klingon or a Liren or Klingon's probably, or the Winds off guard like that, because of their powers when they go into disruptors, and usually they might have like two overloaded, maybe two standard possibly, or just have all standard or not have anything in there at all, which limits what they can do when it comes to offensive potential. Let's say, just for giggles, that they decide, well, this is a crazy situation, which is if they had overloaded two of the disruptors and two of them were standard, let's say they did that. So that means they didn't have extra power for tractor, so they gave up early after you gave them one, and they looked at their power and went, you know, I'm just going to, I can't fight this. In that case, what they might do is actually overload all disruptors at that point. Hope, you know, they should then be able to get through your shields, get internals, hope and pray that they get a tractor beam on that first set of internals. And then the next set of internals, and hopefully they can get it so that you're not actually turning the next impulse. In which case, if you're not moving the next impulse, because obviously it gets a little more difficult after you tractor them to actually change facings. And of course, again, it depends on it might Yeah, you might be able to do it if your tractor room and it gives you lots of, you only use 1 point of power. You know, I've seen the power that you have already allocated for your tractors. But of course, you got one thing you must remember about heading and tractors. Heading and tractors, you get a plus one shift if you're tracking your opponent and you try to head. Because if you do that, and that means that bonus that you, that lovely, lovely bonus that you have, to have so that you're protected, you're not. If you roll a six, you're dead. Plain simple. So, but you know, but most probably you won't have that problem, because to truly get this, it's going to have to be three impulses as it stands, because of you, he's probably not going to want to, if he gets through with disruptors, to penetrate the shield, then some more phasers to get some more damage, and then another phaser to get more damage, and try his hardest to kill two tractors. Because of when he's killing those two tractors, then he can get free and you're dead. At that point, you're dead. You know, you're not quite dead, but at the very least, your opponent can do something you don't want him to do, which is actually he can mob weasel. In which case, launching the plasma is pointless. But, so, if you can pull that off, you can pull off the Gorn anchor, which, again, I've tried at least, I know I've tried at least once in the past couple of years. I'm willing to bet I've probably tried it before, but I think that might have been with a Zinni. But it's the same. The thing is, the same thing applies though in that case, and that is that try to get your opponent early. I've yet to be successful with it. But here's the thing: if you can be successful, you'll win like that. And any opponent that you have, if you're successful in getting in a tractor, most of them will concede right away. If not even concede right away. You know, it depends upon what they roll and so forth, what kind of weapons they have. Depends upon the opponent. You know, so after the plasmas land, that's when the game's over. If you launch 100 points of plasma against your opponent against a 30-point shield and possibly an additional 5 or 10 points of reinforcement. It doesn't say 10 points. If they're like a disruptor user and they decide to put 10 points of power into a shield because you don't know what they were going to plan on doing. They were planning on taking a plasma early and then come in, and so they're set for the next turn and possibly a quick hit you and run. But even that, if they had tried to do that, that's 60 internals, game's over before you even got out of turn one. So, as I said, that's one of those really bold moves. Now, getting back to actually the Gorn. Obviously, the biggest issue that the Gorn has is, of course, the turn mode. Turn mode D, one of the worst. That's why it's called the Battle Tug. But it's got a wonderful array of phasers. The great thing about the Gorn, and the worst and the bad thing about the Gorn, is it's got a great array of phasers. That means no matter what direction that opponent is in compared to your ship, you've got probably like four phaser ones that you can fire at him. That brings up the problem, which is it makes it harder to focus on your opponent and getting enough phasers. obviously has the same issue that some of the other ones have. For example, the Sartorian. The Sartorian has, actually, there's better, but which is it has six, you know, when it comes to the front arc, except for, you know, center line, which case has eight. In the case of the Gorn, it's got four, you know, on whatever direction, but if you get them right on the oblique or center line, you've got an additional. You can have additional two. Make that back up. I got that wrong. It is not four, it's three. Because, you know, it's three in any direction, not four in any direction. But the same thing holds true. That is that your opponent, you always have these three phaser ones in arc of your opponent. If you're coming up from the rear, you've got three phaser ones. Now, one of the bad things about the Gorn, another bad thing about the Gorn is, of course, it only has two phaser threes. One, which is LS. One, that is RS. So you don't have much protection for your phasers, which is, of course, as I mentioned before, is one of your primary weapons. When it comes, because you're a plasma chucker, that's one of your primary weapons. Now, it has the beauty, which I like, which is the LPRP arcs when it comes to the plasma S's. Now, the plasma F's, this is to me always is kind of goofy. And that is, it's got LS, RS. I preferably would have liked to have the plasma F's to match the plasma S's arcs as an LPRP, because of that means there is an arc. There's a place in the arc of you around in the like for the LP, it would actually be in like the right front arc. There's a place in there where you will only be able to get one plasma to launch.
You won't be able to get that the offside plasma F to launch. That's what I'm trying to get at. So that's one of those quirky arcs that invariably I don't like. Obviously, one of the beauties of the Gorn Tournament Cruiser is, of course, the center hull. It's got some, not a lot, but some, which makes it greatly flexible. Because of that means if you get a lot of front hull hits, you can hit front hull and then you go to center hull. If you get a lot of aft hull hits, aft hull and then center hull. So depending upon, so you got pretty good protection for things like batteries and APRs. So you got overall, you got good protection when it comes to that. And obviously, another benefit of the Gorn is that it has two shuttle bays, which is beautiful. If you're going, you know that Gorn anchor? Let's just add insult to injury and go, you know, I'm going to launch my suicide shuttles at you too. You want to talk about, the problem with that is you might blow up your opponent's ship, in which case, in quote unquote real life SFP, as in not tournament, then you'd have to worry about blowback, you know, your opponent's ship blowing up in your face, you know, things like that. But obviously, in tournament play, this means you win anyway, but you just, it's called total overkill. So, but that, you know, that is one of those good things that you have on the Gorn ship. You know, good control centers. Obviously, it doesn't have the center warp like the Firehawk, but it has left normal, the right left warp. And so, it's a good, strong ship. It can take a beat and keep coming at you. And it's got, as I said, it has those wonderful phaser arcs so that you can fire at your opponent wherever he is. But so I think at that now I think I'll close up because I think I've talked about everything that comes with Rhyme and the Gorns, and just being a plasma chocolate in general, you know, which is you're gonna be using your pseudos a lot. Remember to use them. At the very least, what's a beautiful time to use your pseudos. Pseudos are is not early on but late, when things are tense, when you've got your opponent in the corner where they're gonna barrel down your plasma, they're gonna see it coming, and you know they have to fight it off with their phasers. At that point, pseudo is wonderful because using some of the scare tactics of spammers, which is, and when you're scared, you're not in your right mind, you will make a mistake. In which case, that will allow you, they'll use up their phasers on your pseudo, and then you'll launch the real one, and then they're toast. So That's one of those ones that if you can wait until later on the turn, do it. And obviously, when it comes to plasma chuckers, you're always balancing when your plasma torpedo launchers are available to launch. And of course, there is the one other thing about that whole thing is energy. You can't try to reload all four plasmas in the same cycle. That's just, it's nuts because of the amount of power required for that last turn of arming goes up. You know, not crazy up, but up enough. Like for plasma S, you go 2-2-4, and then you know. A plasma F 1-1-3. Okay, let's say that you're launching that you want to charge all four plasmas on, you know, finish them all at the same time. That means you got set basically 3-4-4-3. That's 3 and 4. That's 7. 3 and 4. That's 7. So that's 14. Because 7 plus is equal to 14. 14 points of power. What is that? That's somewhere around a quarter, if not, actually no, it's almost a half. It's somewhere between a quarter and a half of all the energy in your entire ship. You don't want to be doing that, which is why, in the case of the photon, you know, when you use photon torpedoes, invariably, you don't want to finish charging all your plasma torpedoes at the same time when it comes to overloading them, because if you have four photons and you're trying that final turn of arming, that is 16 points of power. You're not going to be moving anywhere. It becomes the biggest issue. So obviously keep energy in mind. Obviously you're not always looking at energy as much as the Andromedan, but you still have to keep an eye on energy, and more importantly, the timing of the finishing off of your weapons, of your plasmas. So with that, I think I will wrap it up for this evening. It's been wonderful hanging out with you guys and had a wonderful time going through all of the ships in the tournament, giving advice on different tactics that can be employed. Obviously, right, now let me review this real quick. I'm pretty sure there is actually next week we have, I think it's our last episode on, because I'm not gonna go through the playtest ships like the Vudar and that kind of thing. Next week is going to be, I'm going to be discussing the Wins tactics. Obviously, a lot of their tactics are going to be similar, if not exact, to the Zinti, but there are some choices, especially when it comes to the Win battle cruiser, because of, unlike the Orion, the Win battle cruiser, you select your package, that's it. You don't have options. You have one package and that has to survive everybody. You cannot particularly focus your, you have like two different packages where you choose whether you need a fast, like for the Orion, you have a fast ship one, i.e. low power, and you have a heavier one that takes up more energy but has a better punch. So until next week, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.